if you want to be a guest, please email me. I have received so many emails of people that are excited and passionate about being a guest on this show. The process is time consuming. I go through about an hour long pre-interview and I determine where you'd fit best in the season. So if you've gone through the pre-interview process, or we've messaged back and forth via email and haven't gone through the pre-interview process, I'm not ignoring you. I promise. There's just a lot on my plate and I am one person. So that being said, I look forward to talking with every one of you that is interested in being on this podcast. Y'all are amazing and I honestly could not do this podcast without the support that I receive from each one of you. So thank you so much.
And I realized that I needed to do something. And what I ended up deciding at 13, and it breaks my heart looking back at this, is I had decided that if I essentially gave my life to Christ that day, I could start bargaining with him. I could become a missionary. I could live my life for God. I could be a Christian 24/7. And one day he would recognize what I was doing and make me straight. And I remember making that conscious decision at 13 to say, I'm going to embrace this. I'm going to really go 150% into this Christian movement, because I know I'm going to come out on the other side with the reward of heterosexuality.
Welcome to the Focus on Your Own Family podcast. Fundamentalist evangelicalism impacted a generation. We survived physical, psychological, mental, and spiritual abuse. We survived the Focus on the Family movement, and we want to talk about it. Trigger warning, guests will be sharing stories of domestic violence, child abuse, and animal abuse. Please listen with caution. Thank you.
This is Adam. Here is his story.
Hey, Adam. How are you today?
Hello, I'm good. How are you doing?
I am good. I'm so excited to have this conversation. I honestly want to get right into it, but for those listening, I do a pre-interview, and Adam and I, we just immediately connected. And right when I had to get off the phone, because it was dinner, I was so sad. I was like, oh man, I should have gotten your number. We just had such a great conversation. I think, and I believe that people need to hear your story. So, when I talk about focus, when I say the word or the title, Focus on the Family, and the name James Dobson, what does that mean to you? What impact did that have in your childhood?
Ooh. James Dobson and Focus on the Family honestly had a giant role to play in my childhood. I think about just the way that I grew up hearing world news and just having it skewed from the view of the church, how it ultimately dove into politics. I mean, you know, how any presidential election, anything like that, I was essentially taught what would God vote for, mm-hmm. and would essentially grow to have to unlearn that. I think about purity culture and just how terrified I was about any type of intimacy. But also how purity culture kind of gave me this safety blanket that wasn't even really a safety blanket, mm-hmm. because it afforded me the opportunity to be a gentleman towards women and not have, you know, these sexual desires, just because that's not where my orientation was. And, mm-hmm. you know, it did a lot and ultimately led to Love One Out, which I think we'll talk about a little later. Like, so Focus on the Family really has ingrained a lot in my childhood. You know, I think the fact that I didn't see The Lion King until I was 22 years old you know, the fact that
you missed the whole Jonathan Taylor Thomas thing. I had to sneak a peek at Jonathan Taylor Thomas because he was not allowed in my bedroom up on my walls like all my friends had. But yeah. Oh, you missed that.
Oh, yeah. Thankfully, at 11, I was able to go watch this man get beaten senseless in the theater, watching Passion of the Christ. Yeah, you know, like, how does that work?
Lucky us. Right. Yeah. I was as we're approaching Halloween, and I was just talking to somebody about this, that I was chastised at my church for trying to cast out or pray away a principality. And because I was a girl, I wasn't allowed to do that because I don't have leadership skills because, you know, girls have emotions. But it's okay. I can stay to casting out demons.
Yay.
But not principalities because those were above my head.
Wow.
And I'm like, you can't see the Lion King, but you can see the Passion of the Christ.
Right.
I can't have like posters of Tiger Beat and Teen Beat and those magazines up on my walls, but I can cast out demons on Halloween night. Lucky me.
Right. Yay.
This isn't a normal childhood.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, one thing I'm very grateful for is a lot of my close friends are really into Halloween, and it's like I'm getting to have all of these crazy Halloween parties, you know, because as a teenager, you know, I wasn't setting foot in anywhere where there was
alcohol. No, you were not.
No.
No. So,
yeah. It was. Focus on the Family did a lot. It warped a lot. I was so into pop music, but there were several years of my life where I didn't really get the experience of so much of the millennial generation because I was invested in Christian music and CCM, contemporary Christian music. And I had thrown all of my secular music away, like this giant book of CDs I'd tossed in the trash because they talked about it at church.
What's the one that you regret the most?
Honestly, it's going to have to be the original Westlife CD that I had, because finding Westlife CDs became so hard. Because they eventually just went to the UK permanently.
Swear It All Over Again?
You know Westlife?
I have a playlist called Boy Bandwagon.
Yes. Okay, so listen, they are coming to the United States, and I'm going to see them with my bestie in March. We're so excited.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm.
Actually, if you don't mind, can I read these lyrics of a Westlife song to you? Because this song got me through so much.
Yeah.
All right. So this song is called Hey Whatever. And the lyrics go, well, I can't control the universe because I'm only a man. And I may read the papers, but it won't tell me who I am. And if you really need a new philosophy, well, there's one that makes sense. The one I profess, I say, hey, whatever, let your beauty come alive. Let your color fill the sky and say whatever. Why don't you liberate your mind? Let your color fill the sky. All the world's a waiting room and we're standing in line.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Just being your true self. I actually have so many memories of belting out that song when I knew nothing more of myself other than I had escaped, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I love that you use that language. I use that language too. I think it's imperative that survivors of the fundamentalist evangelical movement start adopting that, mm-hmm. because we don't walk away. I say in air quotes, we don't backslide in air. We don't do that. We're people that were raised in a space where we were held emotionally hostage.
Yeah.
And we didn't have the freedom
No.
To be able to make these choices for ourselves. My parents made these choices for me before I was born, that this was what they were going to choose to do. This is how they were going to choose to raise me. Uh-huh. And I think the biggest gift that, at least for myself, that I can give my kids is the freedom and ability to choose what they want for themselves with critical thinking and knowledge. I digress, but I asked my kid the other day, he'll be 14 in a couple days. And I said, "Hey, tell me what the rapture is." And he looked at me and he goes, "What is rapture?" And just wanted to burst at the seams, because I am my kids aren't going to grow up with that anxiety.
With the anxiety of the parents don't come home on time. Did you miss it? Yep. Were you left behind? Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cause we all deal with that. We didn't have cell phones. So if our parents decided that they wanted to make a quick stop and that quick stop turned into an hour, we stayed awake at night thinking that we were terrible sinners and we were left behind and we were essentially orphaned by God. So I'm thankful that that is not something that is written into the story of their life. Like, we escaped early enough in their life that they don't know about that. Awesome.
And they shouldn't have to worry about that.
Yeah. So was going back, were you like a cradle Christian, or is this something that your parents were like quasi into? Very into.
So,
did you grow up with like the strong-willed child? Your mom using wooden spoons, that sort of thing? Like, how intense was it?
It was pretty intense. So growing up, we went to church. We actually went to a Pentecostal church every Sunday. And we ended up, I think when I was 11, we ended up going to a church that was a little closer to home because my parents wanted me to be in like a youth group. Mm-hmm. And honestly, at that point, I had been involved in church kind of. I mean, I grew up with like vacation Bible school, I had probably gotten saved as a child. I know distinctly a time when I got saved, quote unquote, at 13. But what happened was, and I haven't ever really talked about this before, my parents had separated when I was 11. Mm-hmm. And they got back together. And when they got back together, they wanted to have a much more focus on God, you know, to heal the family and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So we got a lot more involved in church, and we ended up switching from Pentecostal churches to a Southern Baptist church.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had kind of grown up where worship was like this real, exciting, dancing around, speaking in tongues, all that stuff.
Because they believe in the modality theology. Yeah, I've been immersed in UPCI theology for a book that I'm writing. And so it's like the oneness and holiness and dress code that's a part of what they are, but their worship is huge, like high octane, loud. Very conservative. The women covered from like neck to ankle thing. But what a stark contrast that must have been for you to go from that to a situation where at one point SBC was preaching against the use of drums.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was very different. I
think back to like revival, even at the Pentecostal churches, that revival was more like, you know, all this loud music, people falling in the floor, like they had the blankets to lay over them when they fell, you know, to the floor, you know, like, and just kind of contrasting that to the Southern Baptist revival, which was like, you know, this man just kind of stood there preaching, you know, hellfire and brimstone this whole time, and then called a whole bunch of people to the altar to, you know, kneel and do their thing. Like, you know, it was very different. You know, but that particular Baptist church had a giant youth group. And I will say we ended up going to this youth retreat called Acquire the Fire. oh dear.
yeah.
We went there many years, and every time we went, I was like, oh my God, this is what I remember, you know? So, yeah, it was a huge contrast. And I will say, that Acquire the Fire experience, I was 13. And I remember, you know, puberty starting to set in, started to realize, you know, hey, I think I'm attracted to, I don't think I'm attracted to the girls. I think I'm attracted to the boys, you know? And I realized that I needed to do something. And what I ended up deciding at 13, and it breaks my heart looking back at this, is I had decided that if I essentially gave my life to Christ that day, I could start bargaining with him. I could become a missionary. I could live my life for God. I could be a Christian 24/7. And one day he would recognize what I was doing and make me straight. And I remember making that conscious decision at 13 to say, I'm going to embrace this. I'm going to really go 150% into this Christian movement, because I know I'm going to come out on the other side with the reward of heterosexuality. And of course, that never happened.
What you just said, though, will so many people will identify with it, because that is what caused us to stay, right? That's what caused anybody that had, that just couldn't fall in line with what they wanted. I'm really passionate about this because this hits me as well, like really deep. I, even to this day, Adam, I will still think, man, if I, like, if this can happen, I'll rededicate my life. Like,
yes,
because it's it's that ingrained that with God, all things are possible.
Yeah.
But the fine print at the bottom is that that's the stuff that they don't say, right? Like, if you do, there's a formula. There's an equation, you know, sacrificing your entire self, allowing yourself to be erased so you can conform to God, not to the world, equals everlasting life, equals happiness, right, equals joy, equals all of these things. And we were destroyed by that equation and that, yes, and that theology, but it's still habitual. Because when things aren't going right, It's just like the thing that we go back to, even though I know it's not true. I will still catch myself like, what, and then I'll say, Stephanie, what are you, you're bargaining.
Yeah.
Why are you, it's, I know it's a part of the grief cycle, but I think that there's something more to that with people like us, like people that have escaped this cult because it's in our, it's in the fabric of who we are.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's fair because it's like we're taught, you know, give up the flesh, as they would say. And it's like embracing yourself versus completely repelling yourself is mm-hmm. like, that takes a while to get from point A to point B. And it's like, you know, there's going to be some hiccups along the way. I find myself in situations too, where I'm just like, I don't know why I'm beating myself up about this, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I do too. Oh, yeah. I'm so happy that you said that. I'm not happy that you had that experience, but the way that you articulated it, I think that's going to give language to so many people that listen to this. And
I hope so.
It is so similar to the things that I hear from other people that have had similar experiences as you have, that I know you're about to dive into. Yeah. It's so similar, just this like, this ache, this like absolute rip your heart into type of thing. So acquire the fire
with it's Ron like, Luce.
It's like the, oh geez. It's I cannot tell you how many times I prayed that God would give me a way to go to acquire the fire, because that's where all the cute boys went.
Oh no.
So all the cute guys were. And I was like, I just want to go. And I just felt like all the really cool privileged kids, like when I privileged in my sphere, it was like where all the really wealthy kids went. And I was like, I just want to go. I want to go to acquire the fire. All the cute boys are there and all the popular kids go. And I did not go. And it was just like, it was all, no, it's,
Actually, I don't know why I said it that way. No, like, great. You didn't have to experience that. That's awesome.
Oh, don't worry. I
Look
had,
at that.
I,
my 13-year-old self feels sorry for you, but I don't.
It's so true. Oh, no. I didn't get to be a part of that trauma. Shoot. Well, I guess I'll get more later.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I will tell you, there was a purity pledge that we all signed.
Oh, don't worry. I signed several of them.
Oh, yeah. You know. Yeah.
I was a card-carrying member of that club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so you're at Acquire the Fire. Mm-hmm. You sign that purity pledge, and you're mm-hmm. thinking, well, this is going to be cake. Mm-hmm. So what happened next?
So I remember going back to school, and I came back. I had a girlfriend before I went to Acquire the Fire. Okay, this was a girl in Virginia Beach, and about an hour away from where I was living. And when I came back, I broke up with her for Jesus. Okay. So I believed that I needed to give my heart and soul to God for this whole journey.
Yeah.
And broke up with her to get closer to God.
Yes.
And that was a thing that happened. So
can we rename it? Like, it's not a Dear John, it's a Dear Jesus.
It's a Dear Jesus, not a Dear John. Yeah.
It's a Dear Jesus conversation. We all had them. I had mm-hmm. them. I know I had that conversation with a guy that I was dating in high school. Like, I just really feel like God wants me to guard my heart and protect my heart right now.
Yeah.
And I'm just really saving myself for my future husband. We were in youth group together.
Oh, like, dear.
When I'm worshiping next to you. Like, what? Yeah.
Girl.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you dear Jesus somebody. Spilling. So you dear Jesus.
Yeah.
It's a verb now.
Mm-hmm.
You dear Jesus some poor little girl and broke her heart, I'm positive. Mm-hmm. And all right, you are sold out for Christ. You've signed the contract,
mm-hmm.
committed your life, broke up with your girlfriend. You're mm-hmm. it's smooth sailing from then on out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the youth group that I was in at the Southern Baptist Church, they put on the Christmas play, a 4th of July concert thing, this Easter play. They did like this Halloween thing about all these people that end up going to hell at the end. And it's like, I did everything, right? I went to church, I'm pretty sure, at least 5 days a week. And so I came back just, this is my life now, you know, because it's truly like that bargaining. You know, I went through the rest of my teenage years was bargaining because I knew one day I had done enough, I would have crossed the finish line and become straight, you know, and it was everything. Like I ended up like becoming the captain of like that Fellowship of Christian Athletes group. I wasn't even an athlete. I had just, I brought my Bible to school every day. I would lead prayer at school. I did like See You at the Poll.
Yeah,
I even
did
a second See You at the Poll. Okay. Because they had this National Day of Prayer and I was like, we're going to pray at the flagpole again. Okay. You know?
You're dropping every single Christian subculture. You're like National Christian Athletes, See You at the Poll, Acquire the Fire, which by the way, we all know is ATF.
Wasn't an athlete.
Yeah. Nope. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It you show up, you know, yeah. Where did you hear about Love One Out? Because my guess is just like that tension, that internal, that internal tension must have been getting so great.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Thank you to those that have reached out with your support. Whether you have left a review, if you haven't left a review, this would be a really, really good time to leave a review. Read every single one of them. So thank you. And for those that are subscribers to my Patreon, thank you. It means so much. One of the new features that I am adding for my paid Patreon subscribers is the chat feature. And this is just a way that we can all continue this conversation that we're having in the podcast. And if you are not a paid subscriber, unfortunately, the chat feature won't be available to you, but you can be a free subscriber and you'll just get the weekly newsletters. Y'all are amazing. And I honestly could not do this podcast without the support that I receive from each one of you. So thank you so much.
Yeah. So I'm going to speed run through parts of my story. So if you want me to pause and kind of sit with something for a bit, feel free to jump in and we can kind of sit there for a bit.
Because
to get from where we are now to there is, there's a journey. I was leading Bible study at the church. I did this thing with the church called visitation, where we would go to people's houses. And if they weren't at church for a while, we would be checking in on them. And it would be like these two deacons and the entire youth group is now in your living room. Just saying hello.
Chat.
We all had jobs. If there was a dog, we would rotate who was going to take care of the dog so that they didn't interrupt the Christian conversations that were happening, or God forbid there's a prayer and you hear a bark. So, so that was basically my life throughout high school. And truthfully, I brought my best friend to my high school reunion, and she was looking around at kind of where I was like within the social structures. And she was like, hold on, you were too Christian for the Christians. because it was like I took it so seriously when they said, give your heart to God, leave it all at the altar. So it was like, all I was this Christian teenager. Going up to senior year, I have this English teacher who is part of this, I'm going to call it what it is, part of this missionary cult that went abroad and did conversational English work in China and different other types of outreach projects throughout the world. And her husband, his name was Daniel. He, you know, was really invested in wanting me to go to this mission trip. And we ended up, you know, my family's a working middle-class family. We ended up raising like $2,500 after my senior year of high school, where, you know, there's like the class ring, all of the, you know, just costs of like graduation photos and all of that. Like, my parents gave up so much. And the fact that, you know, we ended up raising money and they gave so much money for me to go on this trip, I'm like, man, they really stuck their neck out for me and really wanted to do the best for me. So I go on this mission trip, and we're in China. Like, we're on a bus in China. I'm with this man. And to go on the trip, by the way, I had to fill out this questionnaire that asked some very, very fucking personal questions.
Yeah.
Like, what is your relationship with pornography, homosexuality, other sexual sins?
Yep.
I was 17. Mm-hmm. So that happened. And I said NA. And I was like, I'm not putting this on a piece of paper. Like, my coming out experience is not going to be an answer to a question on a piece of paper.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
So I'm on this bus and Daniel comes to me. I'm making names for other people, but Daniel gets to be called Daniel. So
that's, you know, fine with me.
Yep. So he sits down next to me on this bus and he goes, so I noticed that you just put that nothing applied to you. He was like, is there anything that you want to tell me? Anything that we can work on together? Anything that you're struggling with? And I looked at him and I was like, I'm not straight. And he looked at me and he said, I want you to change your language. He was like, I want you to change your language to say, you know, I struggle with same-sex attraction. And he was like, I want you to look at same-sex attraction like a backpack. And at any point, you can just take it off and give it to God. And he also told me I could do the same thing with my Tourette syndrome. So that happened. And I had a pretty cool time in China outside of having just been outed in conversation to this one person. It was a very unique experience. And I had started coming out prior to that, and was really like, I wasn't going to open up about it on this trip. There was this guy who like posted his phone number online and said, like, if you have any secrets, you're welcome to call. I'll hold space. And literally, like, while I was getting my prom tux, I was calling this man and sobbing, saying that I was gay. And, you know, it was that was the first time I said it. Then I started telling some of the friends that I went on that trip with. And it was like, what I was presenting to them, though, was I'm dealing with it. I don't know what to do, right? Like, I've been dealing with this for so long. I've been fighting this for so long. I don't want to be this way, but this is kind of what I'm dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
I was being pretty secretive about it outside of that, outside of telling a couple close friends and my prom date, you know, which she already knew. She was like, yeah, I would not have gone to prom with you if I thought you were straight. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel very safe with you. It's fine. But so I'm so sorry. I just took us in like 12 different directions.
I love it.
Okay. So back on the bus in China. So I tell him this. He tells me it's basically like a backpack that I can just take off and give to God. And I start thinking about it that way. And I start actually identifying as heterosexual. And I'm like, on this trip, for this month-long trip, I'm going through this little flip in my mind where I'm like, I'm actually not gay. And it's like, you know, I'm thinking at that time, I'm like, man, this has been so much effort, so many years when I could just change my vocabulary and boom, look at that. I'm going to be a straight person now.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, came home, went to Longwood University. I originally wanted to be like a math teacher. And I encountered this individual. I'm going to call him Jack. So Jack and I hit it right off. I was from Prince George. He was from a farm nearby. He was like a commuter student. And we became very close friends. And he was very straight. And I felt like I could confide in him to say, you know, hey, I'm gay. And at that point in time, like, I was saying it out loud. And he was like, I really don't care. Like, you're a good friend of mine. I became very close with his family. We became really tight. And truthfully, like, with the experience of coming out to my mom and dad, he was there and really helped guide me through that.
Mm-hmm.
And was an amazing support. But I realized, like, over winter break that I actually, like, I was falling in love with this guy. This was my first love. Mm-hmm. And I had that weighted down throughout the whole winter break that I had fallen in love with a straight guy. Like, and I remember cursing God out about that. Because it was like, wait a second. So I have spent my entire life now trying to change, trying to live by all these standards, you know, be this best Christian, saving all of these souls. And now the first time I get to experience love, it's going to be with somebody who is completely unavailable. And it's like, I was cursing at God. I remember I was driving home. I had spent like a little Christmas weekend with him and his family and realized this and was cursing God out on this highway. And got home, realized that this was so heavy on my mind that I wanted to see this man, that I was in love with this man. And when I got back to college, I approached Jack, told him, I don't want to feel this way. I've been dealing with this my entire life, so I can guarantee you I can fight something that I'm feeling. And I said, I'm falling in love with you. And his warmth, his comfort that he had given me throughout this coming out process that was happening just kind of changed into this cold stare. And he told me, he was like, I got to think about this one. Came back a couple days later. In the process, I had purchased quite a few pills that I had kind of forecasted, you know, this one or two things is going to happen. I am not doing this without this man in my life. So if there's no man, there's no life.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to me and he told me, he was like, we have some classes together. I don't want you to sit next to me anymore. He was like, I don't want you to address me. I don't want you to talk to my family anymore. I don't want to be part of your life anymore. So if you see me, you're invisible to me. And I was heartbroken. My first love turned out to be just this unbelievable tragedy. And that evening, I attempted suicide. I had taken so many pills, just hoping that my heart would stop or something. And I am at the hospital. My mom was trying to call me. She had the motherly instinct that something was up. This guy, Jack, he ended up calling me. I ended up picking the phone up for him. I shared with him where I was, which was like in this bathroom at a Walmart near the college. And he ended up sending like these police officers who got me to an ambulance, got my stomach pumped, went to a hospital. And Daniel from the mission trip came to the hospital with my parents, told them, I'm going to take care of him. I have something that I know will treat him, will heal him, will take care of him, and y'all don't have to worry about anything. We're going to take care of it. I had told my mom prior to seeing Daniel that the first chance I got, I didn't want to be here anymore. I was going to finish this off. I was going to end my life. Daniel came into the room, looked at me, and said, you tried being gay, and look what happened.
So
he and I started these weekly meetings. I went home with my family. I had gotten back in touch with like the grocery store that I worked at in high school. They had given me a job so I could work some hours. Since campus police and the police were involved, the college actually granted me like this medical leave where my tuition was reimbursed. And I essentially dropped out of college, met with Daniel weekly to try to change. He would really wordsmith things with me and tell me about how if I'm looking at pornography, that I have lost my virginity, that I wasn't pure, that I was, in fact, perverted and needed to confess and change. And, you know, would use scriptures to guide me through healing from same-sex attraction, as he called it. So at that point, it became a very lonely journey, but it was one that I was so far at rock bottom that I was like, yeah, if this is the recovery plan, let's do it. Because when he said that to me, when he said, you tried being gay and look what happened, it was like it flipped. And I was like, he's right. You know, one of the things that he did is, of course, he would continuously use the language of same-sex attraction, and would really want me to acknowledge that changing my vocabulary is what was going to be the most important thing, that using different vocabulary and not saying I'm gay or I'm not straight, but saying I struggle with same-sex attraction removed myself from what he would refer to as the sin, and would allow me to be my whole self. And up to that point in time, between the time that I went to college and had gone on the mission trip, like that time before I became a freshman, I discredited a lot of what he said. I was smart. I was an honor roll student. I was on several scholarships at college. I was not afraid to question things. I was becoming a liberal Christian after being raised in the Southern Baptist Church. Like, I was pushing back against the grain, and I wasn't afraid. I wasn't afraid to start discovering my voice. And it was the merging of these two worlds of being gay and being a Christian that I so desperately wanted to discover. And it was the first time that somebody had presented something to me that was like, well, you can use these two things in the same sentence. Here's how. And because I was at such a low point in my life, I was vulnerable. Cult leaders like that, they prey on the vulnerable. They will inject themselves into your life when you are at your lowest so that they can be your savior, so that you feel safe, that you feel like, you know, that you can listen to them and follow them. And that's essentially what he did. He had me in this different train of thinking. You know, someone who was formerly a college student was now being fully led down this whole different path of life. He had connected me with this Christian therapist. And it was like, he believed that that was going to be what was best for me, that he had, I can't remember if he actually booked the first session or if he gave my information to her or what, but I remember I had set up that first initial session with her and I felt like I was on the road to recovery. And what's wild about it is this entrance into this world of what I now know to be called conversion therapy. I was using Maslow's hierarchy of needs to characterize how I was growing in this type of therapy, because at that point in time, I saw the suicide attempt that, yeah, I was at this rock bottom point in my life and I was rebuilding. And yeah.
Insinuating that what you had before was not good, and using the fact that you had gone to college, you're now breaking free of the way that you framed the world. You're becoming a healthier person. And of course, they use that against you.
Yeah. Ugh. At that point, my parents saw that I didn't want to kill myself anymore. So they felt like I was making progress.
Mm-hmm.
I was now talking about what I was learning with Daniel, what I was doing with the church, because I went back into church and, you know, I essentially went back to what my life was like in high school, just minus going to high school. I started becoming a missionary again. We actually went to Canada and I was a street evangelist. And it was like, I was using coming back from a suicide attempt to show how God can change somebody's life and save them, to try to lead others to Jesus.
Rather than confronting the pain.
Oh, yeah.
Bypassing it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was like, now what I was seeing was Daniel was unfolding this path that was what I was trying to do up to that point in my whole life, which was bargain with God and find a way to come out on the other side heterosexual. And he had really just opened up this door to a future that had that. And I believed it. I was like, yes, let's do this. He installed like this porn monitor thing on my computer.
Oh, Covenant Eyes.
Yeah. 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 Oh, man. And he would have me sit with him and confess anytime I was looking at a man, anytime I had watched porn, anytime I felt temptation. And at one point he told me, he was like, you know, thinking of the path of where we're going, we have two options. He was like, the first option is if you were pure in heart and if you didn't struggle with anything of sexual desire, we would be working towards a path of celibacy and, you know, kind of choosing that life as a pure future for you. And he was like, but that's not what we have going on here. He was like, you have the desire, the experiences, the lifestyle that needs to be brought to the altar to change. And he told me the goal is to make sure that you are a heterosexual man and that you're able to marry a woman. Now, mind you, this was, I think, 2 weeks after I came out of the hospital. And we were, this was the plan. This was laid out before me as the plan of recovery. And my parents saw that I was finding hope. I was bringing language to the first time of this struggle that I couldn't put into words as a kid, that I was actually fighting. I was doing everything in my power to run away from as a kid, as a teenager. And now I suddenly had the words. That's why these things are so dangerous, is because we hide. We do everything that we possibly can to keep this secret away. And what this does is, instead of allowing for, what this does is, instead of ensuring that that secrecy stays there, it actually gives you language to almost come out, but in a different type of way, where it's like you're almost uniting this Christian thought process, this thought about prayer, meditation, going to church, and all these things that are familiar, and you get to keep that. But now you're also introducing this hidden part of yourself into the conversation, and you don't have to lose either of them. And it sounds so freeing and healing on the surface. But what it is, it's just digging that hole deeper and deeper and deeper. And that's where Daniel and I went. We went just deeper and deeper down. And he had so much control over my life.
What I hear is that they take this idea from Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous. I am so and I am an alcoholic. So it's I am Adam. Although you're not saying gay, you would say I struggle with same-sex attraction. Mm-hmm. But by the grace of God, he's making it. He's taking this. He's repairing me. You get to come out. You get to be like, yeah, this is me. But it's under this shroud. It's shrouded in shame.
Yeah.
Of this is who I am and I suck. But God will change me. If I am holy enough, if I am enough, God will counteract this for me.
Yeah.
It's terrible. And he had you in that spot where he can completely manipulate your mind.
Completely. Yeah. There was, there were some periods of time where not necessarily events that happened, but specifically the relationships with my parents were like who they were in my life and what my interactions with them as were, who they were in my life and what those interactions were like as a child. Those were shifted. Those memories were kind of twisted around so that I saw the overbearing mother and emotionally absent father. With Daniel specifically, that was never part of it. But he was the entry point. He was that first point of contact. And I can honestly say I wish I never met this man. Because had I not met him, this could have gone completely different. You know, I could have found an actual therapist. I could have realized that there is a community out there that embraces gay people, churches that do that, churches that welcome queer people. I can't attend those churches because it's like my triggers are on both sides, you know? There was a fashion show a couple years ago at the Metropolitan Community Church. and they were playing the song Heart of Worship. I'm sure you remember that song.
I know that song.
Yeah. And this woman comes out in these pastoral gowns and just rainbow sashes all down. And I sobbed because I have never had a song that I grew up like that and embracing queer culture fused like that. But that's kind of the experience every time I go to a queer Christian church, and I just can't handle that all the time. It's too much. I think it's amazing that people in our community can find a religious community and worship. I don't identify as a Christian. I used to work for a big bank, and we had this diversity conversation where we would share stories with each other, with the intent of listening. And there was somebody who was part of this Baptist Bible study who was in my group, and he invited me to come with him. And I was like, you know what? Christianity is familiar. At that point in time, I didn't feel like I had fully resolved that. So I was like, let's try it. And I approached this Bible study as openly gay. I wasn't hiding it. I was like, I refuse to hide this now. This was not too long ago. This was 6-7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And found this community, got really involved in this Bible study. And then one guy who I felt like I had vibed with invited me out for lunch, basically said, how can you live with yourself knowing that what you're preaching and what you're teaching is going to send you straight to hell? And I looked him dead in the face and I said, I hope you know that that type of rhetoric kills people. I was like, this is not acceptable. I don't welcome this in my life, and I'm going to leave. And I was like, but here's $20. I'm not going to make you pay for my food. I don't want anything from you. Have a great day. And left. And that was my last experience with the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see myself going back. Daniel was someone who I honestly think thought that he was doing well, thought that he was doing a good thing. And that's the craziest part in all of this is, you know, to him, he was investing all of this time as this spiritual life coach or counselor, whatever he wanted to call himself. Really, all he's doing is causing egregious trauma.
Yep.
And I don't know if he's still out and about doing these mission trips with these kids. I hope to God not, because there are so many of us who have gone on, we call it the trip, right? Because it's honestly where it's like you're in a completely foreign country, no access to resources to get home. Where are you going to go? Right? You know, so it's perfect place for them to really just become enmeshed in your life.
Yeah.
There are so many stories of how people have gone on the trip and just had their lives destroyed by this man. I'm not going to share their stories. I think their stories are theirs to share, but it runs deep. It runs into, you were talking about these types of forced marriages, purity culture, just a very toxic cult of a culture. And that was, I think going to college was me trying to free myself of all of that. And me coming back from the suicide attempt and finding myself back under his spiritual care. I use care with a lot of air quotes.
Mm-hmm.
that was me basically getting pulled back in. When I think about the depth of that, right? The depth of, I was at the lowest point in my life. This man was restructuring how I identified myself when I had nothing, essentially nothing there, nothing that I identified with this, or nothing that I identified with. He was restructuring me. He was brainwashing me.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that I got out eventually, I'm just sitting here in this moment. I'm like, man, the amount of resilience that it takes to escape that type of mental enmeshment, that type of identity and validation. I mean, you have to, you know, you want to talk about how Christians say deny everything. You have to truly deny everything, be willing to walk away from everyone in your life just for the purpose of knowing yourself, of being true, being honest. Yeah. You know, that's the true victory. That's the true freedom. So
I'm with you. We're survivors.
We are survivors. Yes.
It's like it was like a SBC potluck of trauma. You got conversion therapy, purity culture, acquire the fight. Like you had your various different traumas that the thing with this cult is the realization of trauma, it comes in layers. I described it with somebody that it's like when you escape, it's a very slow thaw.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know what has been, what needs to be thought out until it gets thought out. And then all of a sudden that's in front of you and you have to deal with that. And then you have to deal with that. It's just this, it continues. You just pull that sweater cord, you pull that onion layer by layer, and it uncovers more and more and more.
Yeah.
I have small kids and I have one small kid. I have two teenagers, but she lives in Kanto. that was one of her favorites last year. And surface pressure, it always really hit me because that was the makeup of my family. Put it on my shoulders and let her handle every single burden, part of the lyrics. And on our way home from her dance practice last night, that song came on. And I heard it for the first time since I've gone no contact with my parents. Oh. And since I have really just like broken all of that.
Uh-huh.
And I had the biggest grin on my face because I just realized I never have to go back to that.
Yeah.
Like that's just it is. It was a choice to leave and I chose my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm choosing not to go back. I know I can, right? Because they're going to be there and believing I'm the prodigal child. I'm the strong-willed child, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can make the choice to go back, but I choose me. And I was never able to do that growing up. Nobody chose me. Nobody chose you, Adam. But we have made the choice to choose ourselves.
Yes.
And that's imperative that we keep choosing ourselves because we can go back to a world where they don't choose us and we don't choose us, but we're choosing not to do that. And
absolutely,
I think that's the biggest takeaway for me in my life right now, that I'm going to choose myself because choosing myself means I'm a better person. I'm a better mom. I'm a better spouse. I'm a better friend.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ever going to choose something that won't choose me in return or that wants a different version of me. Like it's not going to happen.
You know what? I'll share something that my counselor did with me, my actual therapist, which is he had me really thinking about all these times in my lives where it was me pre all of this, me at the lowest point in my life, me where I was being counseled by Daniel, and me and these different elements of conversion therapy, which we'll get into next time, talking it out and talking to each other in third person in that therapy room. That was the most healing thing ever, because when you go through trauma like that, it's easy to walk away and just disregard everything behind you. I ended up facing these different versions of myself and how, yes, I had been through so much, but there were elements of myself that I can glean from these different parts of my past and use for the greater good, just being there for a friend, or being a comfort, or of just finding my own strength. And it was really helpful, because I may go through some tough times and I hear different reactions to it that come from different points in my life, where I sometimes have an urge to pray, and I'm like, I know where that comes from. And I understand why I'm thinking that. It's because this is really difficult, but we're going to be okay. And that's not the answer. You know, like being able to have that self-dialogue is probably one of the strongest things that I've taken from actual therapy. I did it for like 3 times a week, but I'm not going to disclose the name of my therapist.
Oh,
but
yeah, no, you're fine.
I will say, I lucked out. I did a lot of research on Psychology Today to find a therapist. I found a therapist who specialized in LGBTQ issues. And so when I walked into his office for the first time and said, hey, I need to talk about conversion therapy, do you know what that is? He actually did. He was very well educated about it. And he himself had actually been a conversion therapy survivor.
Yeah.
And it was like... oh my gosh. Like,
yeah,
I'm going to be okay. All that to say, Daniel introduced me to that world. And he introduced me to this counselor where I was going to see this woman for licensed help with prayer at the beginning and the end of every session. And then eventually, Daniel said, hey, I want you to check out this conference that's coming to Williamsburg. And he gave me this website that I looked up, and it was called Love One Out. And I went home and did the research. It's like, I need to go to this. And going through the months of one-on-one time with Daniel and the months of counseling, where it was like weekly counseling to essentially heal from a suicide attempt, which never actually happened. I think that's telling, right? I'm here taking on this whole new identity, never actually dealing with a suicide attempt. In fact, the counselor wanted me, the licensed therapist that Daniel had connected me to, wanted me to acknowledge that my suicide attempt was a cry for help. And I stuck to my guns and I said, no, I did not want to be here anymore. And I started that journey out with so much perseverance, so much resistance to anything that would contradict who I was, how I felt, how I believed. And that did not last long. I did the research, came to my parents, and I said, hey, I need $900 so that I can attend Love One Out in Williamsburg. And I showed them the web address. I was taking on this life of struggling with same-sex attraction. You know, at the grocery store I worked at, one of my coworkers asked me one time, wait, so are you gay? And I was like, no, but I used to be, you know, and truly took that on. And everything had paved the way for me to go to love one out and just take it all in and fall even deeper.
And that's where we're going to start on part two. But I have a question. Because you and I and pretty much everybody that was from our upbringing.
Yeah.
If maybe you're like, we catch ourselves praying, right? We catch ourselves doing things. So can we just say we're struggling with like, we're not Christians. We used to be.
We used to be Christians. We're struggling.
We're like struggling with, what would you say? Like Jesus attraction? I don't know what you would call that.
We're struggling with PPS, prayer problem solving.
Yes. I have PPS disorder. What is
PPS
that? Prayer
yeah.
problem solving disorder. Prayer problem solving dysphoria.
Prayer problem solving dysphoria.
Because it's a dysphoria.
It is. It's truly just, you know.
Oh, I mean, meditation is great to help to calm you down. Like, I love going into the mountains. I love being in nature. I still believe that there is something greater, that there is a great divine, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to part two. You're incredible, Adam. You're beautiful. I'm so thankful. And don't dear Jesus me, okay? Like, come back for part two.
Oh my gosh, of course. Yeah. No, I'm just not going to pray for you. I'm going to see you again.
Right. Thank you so much for listening. Please make sure that you are kind to yourself and to others. If you are interested in supporting this show, please click the link at the bottom to my Patreon. These shows take a lot of time and resources, and any support is appreciated. If you are interested in being a guest, please email the show at focusonyourownfamilypodcast@gmail.com. Inside of the show notes, you will find the links to mine and the guests' socials. Please give us a follow. We look forward to talking with you and connecting with you.